We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is 5 o'clock on the East Coast, 2 o'clock on the West Coast, and everything in between. We are so happy that you have joined us today for this conversation around inclusive innovation, how school districts can unlock the power of R&D to create transformative solutions. I'm excited to be joined by friends here. Dr. Baron Davis, Senior Advisor, Digital Promise, former Superintendent, Richland 2 School District in South Carolina. And three friends from the League of Innovative Schools, Dr. Michelle Miller, Superintendent of South Fayette Township School District outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Dr. Julie Mitchell, Superintendent of Roland Unified School District outside of Los Angeles. And Dr. Mike Naylor, Superintendent of Mineola Union Free School District in Long Island, New York, and also Chair of the League Advisory Committee. So let's go ahead and dive in. We do have a couple of poll questions to kick us off today. So we'd love for you to share with us, does your district, school, or organization have a defined process today to conduct research to analyze significant education challenges? So I see the numbers coming in live. And it looks like many are not sure. An opportunity to explore and see whether or not you have this the capacity for research at your organization. Some yes do have it and some no. Thank you very much. We're going to close that poll. We have one more question for you. Second question is, does your school district, school or organization have a defined process to create innovative solutions to address significant challenges? So do you have the capacity to design and develop innovative solutions? And let's see as folks are coming in on that one. All right, a little more even. Yes, some no, some not sure. But this gives us a good temperature check for as we go into this conversation talking about R&D, thinking about the capacity to bring this closer into your district, school, or organization. So thank you for that. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about our agenda today. So we're going to start with what is and why R&D. Talk about a vision for how districts and communities can engage in R&D. The districts will share about the value of inclusive innovation and R&D in the work that they're doing. And we have a special invitation at the end of this session to some workshop opportunities that we're going to be hosting starting in February. So the first piece is what is and why research and development. Starts by defining what R&D is. There are many, many, many definitions of R&D across the sectors, from engineering to technology to healthcare to defense. To energy, there are different ways to define research and development across sectors. Some definitions are very broad, so increasing the knowledge of humankind, culture, and society, devising new applications, products, and services, and systems. And some are very kind of narrowly defined, if you will, a methodology for analyzing challenges and opportunities, creating innovative evidence-based solutions. The big takeaway is, you know, research and development enables us to gather and analyze knowledge and synthesize knowledge around challenges and opportunities and apply that knowledge in the creation of programs and tools and models and services. And so that is really kind of the definition, the core definition of R&D. If we look at the investment in the United States at a federal level around research and development. Not surprisingly, the lion's share of R&D dollars goes towards defense, towards our national security, towards healthcare, to the health and wellness of our country. Also, there's more dollars going into energy and energy sources and new technologies. When we look at education, the investment, you know, is much lower. It's around 0.5%, at least. These are numbers from 2022. And I purposely selected a black and white image here because it really speaks to the underinvestment, if you will, in the opportunity to infuse investment and research and development into education to really advance teaching and learning innovation. At the time we're at right now, we all know the situation that we're all facing. We know the data, right? We know that students are behind, right, in grade level. We know that parents are very concerned about where their students are academically. We know the challenges around mental health around with staff and with students. There are more and more data points that point to the challenges that we're facing. When I look at this slide, I think about opportunity, right? Where there are opportunities for us to invest, opportunities for us to accelerate, opportunities for us to address these persistent and emerging challenges. And that's what R&D can help to enable. There is promising news at the federal level, bipartisan support for federal policy around R&D. In December, Congressman Fitzpatrick, Congresswoman Bonamici introduced bipartisan legislation to accelerate teaching and learning innovation through R&D by establishing the NEED Act, New Essentials Education Discoveries, to create a new center to advance R&D. So that's really great news at the federal level. In addition, there's some promising news within the Advanced Research and Education Act around language to support state and districts' investment in R&D and collaborative models. Digital Promise is a member of the Alliance for Learning Innovation, ALLI. This organization is an organization of many organizations across the education sector who are supporting and advancing policy around R&D. So I invite you to check out allycoalition.org. So at the Center for Inclusive Innovation, we imagine, what if every school and community across the country was an education R&D innovation hub? What if this was a research and design team? This is Reynoldsburg City Schools, one of the projects that we did with them last year. Students, families, parents, researchers, developers, district leaders, all around a table imagining new models for supporting students in learning in the classroom. What if families and teachers and developers and researchers co-researched, co-created solutions together? This is Bristol Township in Pennsylvania, where this team worked together to bring forward a model around student-led mental health professional development for teachers. This is co-creation, folks. This is co-research and co-design, and it unlocks new opportunities, new ideas that we need today. And think about scaling. What if schools and communities across the country were able to share their innovations with each other and scale this work in many ways? So that really is at the heart of how we think about education R&D, partnerships with schools, communities, researchers, and developers to transform education. Just yesterday, we released our new paper, How Unlocking the Power of R&D Through Inclusive Innovation Can Transform Education. We should be dropping a link into the chat. You'll see stories and case studies from district leaders across the country, research findings, emerging solutions, and also introduce our new model of inclusive innovation, V2O. So please take a look at that. So what is inclusive innovation? The short story is that we focus on creating opportunities for those that are not at the education innovation today, those that are most impacted by education challenges, so that they can lead, participate in, and benefit from education innovation. So these tables where researchers are side by side with students, with families, with teachers, with district leaders, and co-research and co-design together. We have a set of core tenets around this work: collective leadership, student voice and leadership, context expertise, continuity of equity, reimagining progress, and building capacity. So this is the backbone of inclusive innovation because it helps us with the intentionality of the R&D process. And the model that we employ talks about readiness to engage in this work, bringing the community together and connecting and committing with each other, inquire and investigate, focusing on the challenges and understanding the challenge, developing progress indicators, designing and developing solutions, implementing them, and ideally scaling to beyond a single community to multiple communities. And I am flying through this because I know we have limited time today, but these are some of the solutions that have emerged. It's exciting. The inclusive cybersecurity pathways with workforce credentials. This initiative, all three district leaders here are engaged in our cybersecurity program, and we'll certainly chat a little bit about that. School system transformations models, thinking differently about school data systems, imagining strengths-based data systems, thinking about diverse workforce recruitment and retention, student engagement in secondary writing. So there are a number of solutions that have been community developed, and this is a journey map that gives you a sense of how inclusive innovation takes shape across the country. If you go to our website, you'll see a journey map for each of our projects, so you can get a sense of how the process works, right? Because we can talk about process, but being able to see and know how the process takes shape is critical, because we need to be able to apply the research, apply the learnings, and be able to move the work forward in a meaningful way. So with my lightning fast introduction, I am now going to pass it to Dr. Davis to talk about districts and communities and where the opportunity is to come together and collaborate. So, Barron.
So thank you, Kim. So you have to be asking yourself the question about why does this matter and why is this important? And what does this vision look like for our communities and for our school districts? And why is inclusive innovation and district and community R&D should be a valuable part of what you do in your school districts and your communities, particularly as it relates to collaboration? So inclusive innovation, what it does is simply offers us a pathway for our school districts and for organizations to tackle what we call these very large and complex and persistent educational challenges. So you probably can go through a list of challenges that you are facing right now. And every school district is facing some existential challenge, a problem that has been persistent for a very long period of time. So whether there are issues around chronic absenteeism, whether there's an issue around literacy, whether it's an issue around disproportionality of students being African-American boys being suspended from schools, we all have some large and complex and persistent challenge that we need to address. And inclusive innovation and community and district R&D gives us an opportunity to address this in a very systemic and structured way. It allows us to research and develop solutions that are effective, sustainable, and that are truly transformative. These are going to be things that are going to hopefully persist beyond your time in your school district. So whether you're doing this at the local level in the classroom or at the school level, building level, or at the district level, these should be solutions that once they are put in place to address these challenges and issues, because of who's been a part of the solution, it's building agency and it's building ownership, it's building urgency and all of those things, because there are so many people that are involved in the process of coming to a solution to address those challenges. It removes this kind of top-down, silo-based way of solving some of these larger problems and larger challenges. So I want to talk a little bit about, really quickly, about what we did when I had an opportunity to serve as superintendent in Richland School District 2. And I have to give the credit to really my staff and the team while I was there, because this was a lot of the work that they put in place. And as superintendent, I always tell you, my job was to create the structures which will allow you to be innovative, allow you to do the work that you need to do. Let me create the structures and give you the resources to allow you to be able to do the work that needs to be done for our students. But one of the programs that we were very, very proud of was called Si Se Puede. And if you, I'm not great in Spanish, so for those of you who are Spanish speaking, please forgive my accent and my pronunciation. But I do know it means that we can, or yes, we can, or yes, you can. And it gives this very kind of call to action for a community, because we were having some issues when it relates to engagement for our non-English speaking student body population. And we wanted to truly engage them in the work that we were doing. So it required us to bring them to the table and bring so many partners to the table to try to bring together and create a program that will engage our families, our students and their parents, and particularly that community, because it was a fast growing community in our school district. And we wanted to make sure that they felt a part and that they felt included. So we wanted to create something that was uniquely theirs that allowed them to buy into the work that we were doing in the school district. So it required us to have district leadership, parents, students, non-English speaking students primarily, and our teachers as well. From the CISE Prede, there were so many things that came out of that, but student-led conferences was one of those things that provided being a solution that helped us tackle this challenge of connection and engagement. Another was ambassadors or interpreters. Our Spanish-speaking students became critical to being interpreters for the school district. So they had an opportunity now to serve in a pivotal role and engage in translating for our faculty and staff. And so parents felt more comfortable coming in to speak because there was someone there that could connect with them instantly. And even more important than that, we also offered a 10-week Spanish-speaking program for our teachers, to give them some basic Spanish so that they could learn to speak some just in general or refresher courses for those who didn't take Spanish in college. Like me, I took French in college and in high school. So this allowed us to do this. And all this came out of the Richland II Center for Inclusive Innovation. The Center for Inclusive Innovation was a building where innovation was central to the work that we did. We constantly allowed ourselves and permitted ourselves to think out the box. And so anytime we had any challenges or problems, large, complex, persistent challenges, we brought this to the Center for Inclusive Innovation and brought in multiple partners to begin dissecting what the true causes were of those issues, allowing us to then find the appropriate solution. So what does inclusive innovation enable school districts and organizations to do? Well, one of the things it allows you to do is to prioritize your context and your community. That's important. It has to be the right shoe for your feet, right? And it needs to be nice and snug and a perfect customized fit for your community, for your school district. It allows us to analyze, it allows you to analyze the root causes to your challenges. It centers the voice and leadership of students. It collaborates with researchers and developers, and building R&D capacity and skill for your district, organization, and community. As Kim so eloquently stated, why can't R&D reside in your community, in your school district? How do we build the capacity of those in your organization to be able to do this work, to be able to do research and design and development for your community, for your school district? And then it creates a solution that reflects your district and organization. I think that's one of probably the most powerful ones. Not a one-size-fits-all. You don't have to select the solution that you think fits. You have now researched and found and designed the solution that fits your school district, your school, your classroom, your community, for your students. And that is the beauty of R&D and why it is important for your community and for your school.
All right. Thank you, Baron. I know that there's many folks and organizations out there, from school districts to community-based organizations, charter schools, and independent schools. And so what we're describing, we use the term school district because we work primarily with school districts, but this applies in every context of all of you that are out there in the audience. So I'm going to invite Michelle and Julie and Mike into the conversation. I'm actually going to ask each of you if you could say just a minute about the work you've been doing around inclusive innovation from this slide. We'll start with Michelle in South Fayette.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Michelle Miller. the proud superintendent of South Fayette Township School District, just south of Pittsburgh. The two programs that you see on the screen are our new cybersecurity program that we have created in partnership with the League and Digital Promise, and along with my colleagues, Julie and Mike, have also created these in their school districts as well. And then Teaching is My Favorite Color, which is an affinity group for many of our teachers of color within the region to create a sense of belonging across districts and within districts, and to provide resources not only for formal kind of informational and practical strategies for our teachers, but also some just social networking to connect our educators together. In terms of cybersecurity, the process that we've used with Digital Promise, Barron said at one point, he said, you know, we have to create those structures. Well, Digital Promise provided us a structure to look at how are we going to be inclusive with this new program to invite students in that might be underrepresented in the cybersecurity field. And the way the protocols that they provided for us and helped us walk us through, we have now applied that in multiple other areas within our district, and we're seeing the same results. We're being invitational. We have more students represented than ever before because we have rethought that we just don't build it and they come, that we need to be invitational. We need to be intentional. And so we went from 20 students in our cybersecurity program, which was one class, one semester, to now a three-year program. We have 100 students in our first year. And the diversity that we now have within that program of underrepresented students in the field is just incredible. So when I think about what our league networks have done, what Digital Promise, the protocols that they brought to us, it has been incredible. They used a design process with Teaching as My Favorite Color, and that's why it has been a success as well. But very proud to be partnering with Digital Promise for those two programs.
Thanks, Michelle. Let's go to California. Julie.
Perfect. Hello, everybody. Julie Mitchell, proud superintendent of the Roland Unified School District located in Los Angeles, California. And as my colleague Michelle shared, we also are part of the League of Innovative Schools and Digital Promise Cybersecurity Program, one of 11 in the nation. And I know Michelle highlighted it perfectly in terms of the design process that Digital Promise shared and worked with us. But it was an excellent addition to our already robust career pathway program. So within our district, we know that we need to provide experiences for students to have them be college and career ready. Not every student is going to college, but our job, our goal, our purpose, and our promise to each and every student is that they have every door open and every opportunity for the future of their choice, that we will value them, support them, they'll be engaged and empowered for the future of their choice. Cybersecurity is one of those career pathways that when a student graduates from our school district, they can go directly to a four-year college or university, go to a two-year school, go into a trade school, go directly into the workforce. They can travel, they can support their family, they can do what it is that they want to do for the future of their choice. And we have not limited any of those opportunities for them. And much of that has been a part of the foundation of our district for a long time. Cybersecurity is the newest addition to our career pathway and has really highlighted the intentional work from the League of Innovative Schools and Inclusive Innovation to make sure that all students have their opportunity to succeed. The other piece that's pictured there, for those of you that are viewing, those of you who are not listening on podcast, it is from our C Summit, which is Students for Equitable Education. And C Summit has run for 3 years. It's supported with one of my colleagues, Marlon Stiles, who's former superintendent of Middletown City Schools in Ohio. And I, during the pandemic, created the Students for Equitable Education, which took students from across the nation, all different time zones, and turned over the research, development, and inclusive innovation to them, that we are here to serve students. And so I encourage you that make sure students always have a voice and a seat at the table in the work that you're doing. That through the C Summit, we students were the teachers, they were the developers, they were the creators. They knew the challenges that they were facing, and they came up with ideas and solutions, and they put on a national virtual conference for 3 years in a row, being able to share with adults how changes in our school systems can be made to better serve them. Because again, our whole purpose for being here, anyone in the field of education, the only reason why we're here is to serve students and to meet their needs. And so students should always have a voice and always have a seat at the table. I know that as educators, we have an opportunity and are often solicited by vendors and people that have really creative programs or services to be able to offer. And I implore you to ask them when you're talking to them about their service, their program, their whatever that they have that can address the challenge that you have. What role did students have in the development, in the research and development of what it is that you want me to embrace and bring to my students? What role did students have in the development of it? Because students should always have some say in the work that they're doing. They know the challenges that they are facing. They're incredibly astute. They're incredibly bright. And so how do we partner not only with our communities and the adults within our organization and our parents and our families, but with our students? Our students are here to partner with us as we go through this work.
Great. Thanks, Julie. Mike Mineola.
Evening, everyone. Michael Nagler, super proud superintendent of Mineola Public Schools in New York. So I know it's alphabetical, that's why I'm last, but you know, I'm not gonna repeat what Michelle and Julie so eloquently said. So I'm just gonna touch on the notion of R&D and education and bring up 2 points. One is DARPA, which is the research and development of the armed forces, has created so many things that we use every day and don't realize it. Like they had the origins of the internet and speech recognition and touch screens and wireless capabilities. And those were byproducts of the research that they did specifically in defense, but also was to the general public, there was all of these benefits. And it drives me a little crazy that we don't think in education to do the same thing. Where is our arm or our organization that can advance these things for the betterment of all children throughout our country? So I'm excited about the Needs Act and the possibility of a federal R&D project. But you know, we have the local needs too. So the Center for Inclusive Innovation is doing exactly that, and Baron touched on it before. Is like education's hyper localized. You know, there really is no such thing as universal school reform or one size fits all and everything works for everybody. But there is definitely a need for change in our practices. And how do we reconcile? Well, if it doesn't work for everyone across the nation, how do we get those things locally and get them to work for us? So I think the whole notion of inclusive innovation is the answer to that. It's a solution that is making it localized to find problems, solutions to problems that are your problems, not your neighbor's problems. I think of it like a startup. You know, startup does this thing called minimal viable product, an MVP. They purposely launch things that don't work. They purposely launch things that aren't ready. And they wait for the feedback. And as the feedback, when you're annoyed with that iOS that comes and you're like, why did I download this thing? They're fixing it in real time based on your feedback. And we need to do more of that in schools. So I'm super excited about it being part of this initiative.
Thanks, Mike. You, in many ways, introduced our first question here by talking about DARPA and examples at the federal level where the investment in innovation has made a great difference in the emerging technologies and innovations. So if we think about the federal R&D policy and the funding opportunity, How do you all imagine the impact that it could have on the work you're doing within your districts? You know, what would the federal policy, the federal funding need to consider to ensure that you're benefiting, your district is benefiting, and you're able to address the challenges in your context and in your community? Who wants to jump in?
I'll jump in. I think that part of it in terms of recognizing that federal piece and how could it benefit, I think some of that is making sure that as we're looking at funding sources and we're looking at those opportunities, is that there's some flexibility in being able to meet. We've talked, all five of us here have spoken about local challenges, local needs. And sometimes when we look at some funding opportunities from the federal level, they've identified a challenge and they're trying to apply funding for something that they need solved at a different level. And it may not meet the needs that Michelle has or that Mike has or that Barron has or Kim or et cetera. And so I think some of it is looking to create broadening those opportunities for funding. I understand that doesn't always meet the interests from the federal perspective. I understand that part of it. But I think that having those opportunities for a little bit broader perspective for challenges that are nationwide, because there are plenty, but what Michelle needs in her district is different than what I need in my district, but it both is meeting the needs of students. Or, Barron had spoken about meeting the needs of his Spanish-speaking population. That happens across districts across the nation. So creating a little bit of flexibility within that, but it can make very significant and lasting impacts to best serve our students, to have the appropriate funding to do the important work that we do.
I think there's a sharing mechanism that's built into that also, because it's R&D for everybody. So it's not, if you have a mechanism to do the work, I get to see where it's been applied in other places and whether or not it's relevant for me. And I think that the sharing is a very important in, we don't reinvent the wheel every time. I mean, that's one of the beauties of the League of Innovative Schools, is that we share things all the time, and it's a network that is like feeds off of one another. And okay, who can do it, and how can we? I've stolen things from so many other districts in the league. It's unbelievable. I call it my own, but it's a benefit to my community because I'm involved in it, and I think that's very attractive on a federal level.
I just want to add to that before Michelle jumps in. Sometimes there's thinking that because solutions are developed in context, that they're not applicable in terms of scale. And I think you're speaking to that a bit, Mike, in the sense that actually these innovations in context can scale. We've seen that in the League of Innovative Schools. So I just want to put that point out there. Michelle, invite you in to share your thoughts.
Well, and I think things are very much scalable. If you get the right person to ask the question, you know, how might we? So I just sent some teachers and a team up to Mike's school. And my question when we debrief next week will be, what did you see? And the question is, how might we? And it doesn't have to be a huge kind of endeavor, but let's start small and let's talk about how this might happen in one classroom with one teacher, with one group of kids, and then it can definitely flourish. I think too, part of what Digital Promise and the League have done when it comes to R&D is, and at that federal level, is making connections. And sometimes we can't do that on our own. Sometimes the connections are national connections. And through cybersecurity, I know that we were connected to powerhouses at IBM, that I might not have all of those networks or those connections, but now we're creating, using that design thinking process, now applying it to our school, what works in our school. We still have autonomy, but we've made connections. So I think, to Mike's point, it is about sharing. across school districts and that scalability across, but it also is making those connections with practitioners from kind of the think tanks or the researchers to what can really happen, and allowing us to be part of that process to say what works, what doesn't at the student level. Because going back to what Jolie said, it's about the students. And so how do we know that it works with students? And have we heard their voice? Have we heard our educators' voice, our practitioners' voice?
Great, thanks. Let's go to our next question. And first of all, I do want to say that, you know, inclusive innovation in the center, we're not the first to bring communities to the table. Okay, so there are a lot of approaches and organizations out there that are engaging communities with schools. So I want to name that, and I want to acknowledge that, we're simply working to look at capacity building and how can we scale up capacity building around R&D such that every school and community across the country has the capacity to engage in this work. When we think about R&D through an inclusive approach, right, with teachers, students, families, and communities, and the idea of transforming education, like how does that take shape on the ground? I'm actually going to ask Baron to come in for a minute on this conversation, because the phrase community engagement has been used, right, to kind of think about how we work with communities. This is about community. This is about community leadership, co-leadership, co-research, and co-design. That's different than engagement. Can you talk just at a high level about what that means? And then we'd love for Mike and Julie and Michelle to just comment around how this takes place, you know, on the ground with the district.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing that I would say is that we have to transition away from, and the frame of reference we need to use is this idea of doing things to and for to with. And that allows us to begin. So when we start thinking about doing it with the community instead of doing it to and for the community, then we transition away from that and we get to that co-leadership and that co-design with the community around and to find these solutions. So it's just a matter of changing your mindset as the leader, particularly of your organization. So whether you're the leader of a huge nonprofit and you're doing some work with the community, or you're a leader of a hospital system and you're doing something for the doing something in the community, or you a school district superintendent or principal, when you come to the table with the idea of doing it with and not four or two, then you are now embodying the spirit of co-lead and co-design.
Great. Thank you. So what does with look like? Right. Who wants to jump in here?
I think, go ahead, Julie, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
I think the, you know, R&D has this connotation of, you know, laden with theory and no practice, and we're digging into things that aren't relevant sometimes, and we forget the development side of the R&D. And I think that's the opportunity here, is how do you develop things with a research in mind, and it's more about doing and trying and failing and moving forward, and the whole design thinking process where you're iterating on a problem and then you're prototyping things and you're coming back around, and it's messy and it's not perfect. But if you don't do it, you're not going to find a solution that's better for and with the community. So I think the with part is inviting people to fail in many respects. Education doesn't like to do that. We like to package things and with a little bow and present them. And even if that bow is a terrible gift, we keep plugging at it because somebody told us it was good. And I think that's the biggest sticking point with any implementation, is we're afraid to say, this doesn't work. We need to do something else.
Thanks, Mike. Michelle.
So 2 points. I think, you know, in our district, we've really focused on that bilateral communication, inviting people to the table and not just talking at them, but really listening and giving them a voice. And that includes our parents, our caregivers, our students, you know, sometimes we want to just tell them, you know, here's what it is, and this is what we want you to, you know, say yes to, or agree, or advocate, where they haven't had a voice from the start. So how do we do that? And so we really talk about bilateral communication as being that starting point to open those lines of communication and ask the questions and get advice and really say, this is what we're thinking. Help us to understand, is this the best way to solve this problem? Do you see other ways? And then invite them to be co-leaders alongside one another and break down some of those stereotypes of power within the organization, but to really co-lead, co-facilitate. And it starts with bilateral communication. And then I'll put it in the chat, but there's something in Pittsburgh that is called Parents as Allies. And I'll throw that out and I'll put the website in there. So we have really in the Pittsburgh area through some small grants have created a lot of different opportunities to identify a problem in our school district and create a parent group that together we solve a problem, small scale, but we make some significant changes. And then what you see is oftentimes those are scalable and that we can build those out even more. So there's already a kind of a structure in place here at Pittsburgh for us to do some of that work, that R&D at that very small level alongside parents. Typically, it's a group of at least five parents co-leading with one or two teachers or administrators. I'll throw that in the chat so that you guys can maybe look at the opportunities that we have in Pittsburgh and some of the great work that has been done through Parents as Allies.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. Julie, anything to add? And by the way, folks, feel free to post questions. I see a couple questions coming in about 6 or 7 minutes, we will take the questions. Julie.
Yeah, I think I would add to what my colleagues have shared is, yes, you know, the first step is inviting folks to the table and to the conversation, but then you need to have a genuine interest, obviously, as my colleagues have and do, in the input that is being provided, the ideas that are being shared, and you need to be open and transparent and honest about the process. As Michelle said, there are some things where a decision has to be made in a certain way, but if we're really working on collaborative work, then we're looking at collaborative solutions and everyone at the table has that equal voice and that equal say, and we must engage in listening. You know, Michelle had said a couple of times, like, well, how might we do this? How might this happen? As ideas are coming in, then we have to be open to listening to them. And a parent, a student, a community member, a caregiver may not be an expert in education. They may not have, you know, their profession and their professional experience may not be in education or in hospitals or whatever your profession is that you're working in. However, they are our clients. They are who we are here to serve, and they know what they need and what they want. And so how do we, in order for us to come up with that elegant solution to the challenge that we've all identified, is to actively engage and listen. And then put into practice the ideas that are presented, you know, as a whole from the participants.
Great, thank you. That's helpful. One thing to think about is the role of leaders in R&D and in inclusive innovation as an R&D model, because it may call for leaders to lean out, not in, right? Which is not how leaders are used to operating, right? You're moving strategies forward and programs and solving challenges on a daily basis. So I'm curious about how you think about the role of leaders in leaning out to enable teachers and students and parents to lean in. Who wants to start on this one?
I can jump in. So I think the first thing, and Baron actually asked the question earlier, you know, how do we build capacity for R&D in our districts? And I think that's the first thing is before we're leaning out or in, it's creating that culture. And so I share this with you, my predecessor, began the culture here of innovation. Here at South Fayette, we talk about being future-focused, student-centered, innovation-driven. We can't do any of those things without having a culture of trusting one another to try things, to try new things, to be able to fail, to be able to fail forward, and to bring new ideas to the table, as crazy as some of them might be. But if they solve something and make things better for students, then we do need to lean in and listen. So I share this and I put it in the chat, but if you haven't had the opportunity, this is a culture change kind of agent for any organization. And it's called Little Bets by Peter Sims. And it talks about, oftentimes when we talk about R&D and innovation, we think of these grand scale, you know, initiatives. We think about, you know, Lakota School District, who has a cybersecurity program. It's already been established. Look how many kids are graduating and what opportunities. When the three of us who started this year, we're starting small. And it's those small bets, one class, one teacher at a time, I think that really changes that culture. But it really helps us, and this book helps us design and develop those innovative practices. So I think the first is setting that foundation. And then, Kim, I love the question about, you know, leaning in or really letting others be on the inside and us being that support around them. And so there's two things that I really think about when it comes to inclusive innovation. And I think the core tenet of that for me is collective ownership, that we all need to be part of the solution, part of the R&D process. And the two parts to that is really the who and then the what. The who am I inviting in? Who needs to be leading this? Is it a student? You know, I co-facilitate a superintendent's advisory council with a student, and it's fantastic. We also have Teaching is My Favorite Color. That is co-led by five practitioners in the field. I just get to be cheerleader. I pay bills, and I'm the cheerleader because I just embrace their work, and I lift it up, and I'm there to support them. So, you know, when I think about the who, really, when we invite people in, whether it be our parents, our teachers, our educators, our students, whoever it might be, how do I invite them in and how do I help them know that their voice, their skills, their talents, we need, and I want to elevate that and make sure they know how much I value that. And then, you know, what role are all of us going to play? And I think that's important. And through some of the design processes that we've been through, the design sprints with Digital Promise and what I've seen through the leak, how did we get there? It's all of those questions about roles and responsibilities, but how do we co-lead, co-create, co-plan? And what does that look like? And I think that then builds that collective ownership, where it doesn't have to be me, doesn't have to be my ideas. And in fact, it's better for the organization when it's not, because it will be sustained. And then I have other champions for the work. I can champion the work, but they can talk about it and really talk peer to peer or parent to parent, student to student, to get that buy-in. And we have found when we use those design sprints or those design pedagogies to look at different complex problems and go back to the start. One, it goes back to making a small bet. We don't have to design something huge. Let's start small. And what can we do? And how can we impact that innovation or develop that innovative idea? And then how are we going to move it forward? And what supports who needs in order to make a substantial change? But those are some of the things that I think about. And you know, in the paper that Kim shared earlier, one of the teachers who's part of Teaching is My Favorite Color, she's quoted, and I think this is the power of co-leading and co-facilitating. And she's a second grade teacher at one of our local school districts, Deshauna Wisniewski, and she said, "It feels surreal that Teaching is My Favorite Color is happening, having a chance to meet, work, and socialize with and mentor my colleagues who are also teachers of color have given me motivation to keep going. I have recently struggled to find my worth in education This has been rejuvenating for me. It has given me back my passion for education that I thought was lost. It has been healing. So I think we always talk about overall, how do we impact our school district and impact our students? But I think more so, we can also think about when we can revive one of our educators to show them that we believe in them and they have worth, that's contagious. And that's then how you get other R&D projects up off their feet, because you have other passionate people who say, I can lead, I can co-lead, and I can make a difference.
Thank you, Michelle. I think I'm going to have to do a lightning round here. I know you wanted to say something, Julie. So we're going to have to keep everything to like one or two sentences. Anything you want to add? And then we've got a couple of questions I want to make sure we get in here.
I think the part just adding to Michelle for me is those small bets as a leader. Lean in, ask the question, lean out, get out of the way. That grassroots efforts that Michelle described was perfect, because when it starts small, it comes from within the organization, from students, from parents, from caregivers, from your staff. It creates something that is sustainable. And once that bell has been rung, you can't unring it. And that is what creates that lasting change that benefits. So don't let research and development scare you. Start small.
Great. Thank you. And Little Bets is flying off the shelves right now. A great book. All right, let's do take a look at some of these questions. Brian Saffel, actually, I am going to respond to you directly by email, because the question you're asking has some additional context in terms of how we look at federal funding at Digital Promise. So I'll be in touch with you personally regarding that question. The next one asked by Kristen Daniels. One question that I think will come up is capacity. How do you imagine that the NEED Act will allow districts to create centers of research and innovation? How could the funding be used to increase the capacity building for innovation? If there are federal funds around capacity building, around R&D, what would you put those towards within your districts? How could that be utilized to build capacity?
I could take that one. So, you know, we just launched this new concept for high school that we're calling Synergy, that has got a lot of traction on different structures for high school day. There are no periods, all the subjects are in the cloud, and it's very attractive to groups of kids, but not all kids. And I think it's not attractive to all kids because of their parents. And because their parents only know one way of doing school, it's not in their mindset that there can be a different way to do it that's more in line with the world that kids live in today, with social media and technology and the pace of change. So we would love for R&D on how do we scale the program, how do we communicate the goals, how do we think about school differently in the world of technology. You know, content, we're structured around content, and you can get all the content you want on your phone. So should there be a shift to skills, and are skills more important and more employable as kids leave us and go on to whatever they pursue? And that is a huge societal issue, not a local school district issue. So I think the R&D around that is imperative to changing public education in our country, because we're stuck in, you know, I'll say the 60s, I want to say the 50s, but you know, we're so far behind because the people making decisions do not have a point of view of a current learner.
Thanks, Mike. How would you use the capacity, Michelle? What comes to mind around R&D?
I really think that it's in organizations that connect all of us, like Digital Promise, League of Innovative Schools, where we can look at what each of us are doing in terms of R&D and then how that might be scalable. But we need ways to connect all of us together and to also identify best practices around the nation. I think that is really critical, is that when we have leaders pressing the envelope, organizations pushing us further, providing those supports to one or two school districts, but then the expectation is that we share with others and we help them build capacity themselves. We need that support because we can do that, but it's hard to make all of those connections without kind of an overarching connection network among all of us and some key people to continue those connections and to match us up.
Great. Thanks, Julie. Closing thought, and then I'm coming to you, Baron, and then we'll close up.
I just want to thank everybody. I know I'm looking at the time and so forth. I would concur with what my colleagues have said, but it's that opportunity to share, that opportunity to network, that teaching education has historically been very isolated profession. You have a 960 square foot classroom. You go in, you close your doors, and you teach. That time has long since passed. Open doors, open corridors across schools, across districts, across states, and let's share ideas. Let's support each other. That if a student wins in Mineola, that's a win for a student in California. If a student wins in, you know, wherever you are, we're all here to support students, each and every one of them. So I think that that NEED Act is need across the nation and sharing.
Aaron, bring us home before I go to the last one.
Yeah, I'll just say that, just Kim, thank you for a great webinar. To Julie, to Michelle, and to Mike. I put in the chat, and to those who are participating, these are three dynamic, innovative leaders in the field of education. And I just highly recommend that you follow them, connect with them, regardless of whether or not you're in the field of education or in another sector of work. We're talking about innovative practices that are transformative in the field, and inclusive innovation and R&D are truly transformative practices that allow you to focus and center in on those who are closest to the challenge, closest to the problem, closest in close proximity. And it removes us who are farther out from trying to find the solution. So just imagine if you were throwing something at a target. The closer you are to the target, the more likely you are to hit it. The farther away from it you are, the less likely. But you do have some sort of perception or some sort of vision, a view from the outside. So it is important to involve as many people in the process as you can, but making sure that those who are closest to the challenge or to the target are at front and center. And oftentimes in schools, that's our students, that's our parents, that's our teachers, our building leaders, as well as our community members. So thank you all for your commitment to improving the educational experiences of children all across this great country.
Thank you, Julie, Michelle, Mike, Baron. Since the day I arrived at Digital Promise, you all are why I'm here and why I do this work. Folks, we spent an hour with you today. It was a lightning fast session, but guess what? There's an opportunity for you to spend a couple hours with us in supporting you, your school district, your school, your community-based organization, to have an introduction to inclusive innovation, to analyze a challenge that you're navigating with support from our Center for Inclusive Innovation Research and Design team. We're dropping a link to an interest form in the chat. We'll also send that link to you after the webinar. We would love to spend more time with you to really take you through a challenge you're navigating, share some of the practices of inclusive innovation, and support you in your work as we start to think about how can every school, every community across the country engage in R&D. Thank you, everyone, for your time and your interest, and more to come. And thank you, Mike and Julie, Baron, and Michelle, for your contribution to this work. Have a good evening, everyone. Stay safe and dry and warm.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.